Chapter 8. Sabrina and Daphne were taken into custody by social services. A friendly man named Mr. Glassman, who insisted they call him Peter, spent several hours trying to track down Granny Relda. By the time she arrived to claim the girls, it was nearly 2 in the morning, and friendly Peter had lost his patience. "These children were found on a yacht in the middle of the New York Harbor, Mrs. Grimm," Peter said sternly. "The boat was filled with alcohol." Granny smiled uncomfortably and shifted in her seat. "This has all been a misunderstanding. The girls and I got separated and..."
"So you were supposed to be on this yacht too?"
"Why, no. We told you what happened. We were kidnapped," Daphne said.
"Young lady, the police have searched the boat. There was no one on it. In fact, the owner, a Mr. John Silver, is thinking of pressing charges against you for stealing it from the marina."
"Forgetful dust," Daphne grumbled.
"The pirates had used it to make a clean getaway." Sabrina kicked her sister under the table and shook her head. The less crazy their story sounded, the better off they would be. The social worker took a deep breath. "Yes, the forgetful dust you keep telling me about. Children, I was your age once. I had imaginary friends, too. They're fun, and they can even be healthy. But you need to learn the difference between reality and fantasy."
"Well, I think the girls learned their lesson," Granny said. "I'm sure you have other things to worry about. I'll take the girls and get out of your hair."
"Mrs. Grimm, you seem like a sweet lady, but I'm afraid that's impossible," Peter said. "We need to evaluate your parenting skills. We can't just let you take the girls with you."
"How long will this evaluation take?" Granny asked.
"A few weeks at least."
"A few weeks?"
the girls cried. Daphne nudged Granny.
"Throw some forgetful dust on him."
Granny shook her head.
"I'm all out."
Peter rolled his eyes. "In the meantime, the state will retain custody of the girls until we can determine if they should be returned to your care," he explained.
"But who's going to take care of them?" Granny Relda asked anxiously.
Just then, there was a knock on the office door. Standing on the threshold was a rail-thin woman with a face Sabrina knew and could never forget. She had thin lips, a hooked nose, and dull gray hair. "Hello, Ms. Smert," Peter said. "Please come in." The orphanage was exactly as Sabrina remembered. Much like Ms. Smert, it was nasty and drained of color. The floors were still filthy and the kids still miserable, and the moth-eaten sheets still smelled of mildew. Smert led them through the main sleeping room, which was little more than a hallway with 2 rows of tightly packed cots filled with sleeping children. Sabrina and Daphne were assigned the last 2 empty beds and then forced to change into what Smert called orphanage attire, bright orange jumpsuits that reminded Sabrina of prisoners' clothes. When the girls were changed, Ms. Smert led them to her office, where they were ordered to sit down. Smert eyed the girls with contempt. "Imagine what a surprise it is to see my favorite orphans, Sally and Denise."
"First, we're not orphans," Sabrina replied. "Second, I'm Sabrina, and this is Daphne."
"Yes, the Grimm sisters, the bane of my existence," the woman replied.
"Listen, let's cut to the chase," Daphne said. "You're going to send us to live with some nutcase, and we're going to escape like we always do. You should probably just send us back to live with our grandmother. At least then we are out of your hair."
Sabrina was stunned by her sister's bold speech. It sounded like something Sabrina herself might have said. Smert smiled, a frightening sight.
"Well, if you would kindly explain your plan to the city, I'm all for it. Unfortunately, I'm required by law to keep trying to place you in a good home, no matter how pointless it all seems."
The caseworker opened a drawer in her desk, took out some forms, and scribbled some notes. Sabrina could read them upside down. Smert had written "Incorrigible Troublemakers" on the form and underlined it after adding several exclamation points at the end.
"I have some good news for you girls," the caseworker offered. "I have already found you a foster home that is willing to take you in."
We don't want to go to a foster home. Our grandmother is going to take us back as soon as she can, Daphne said.
I highly doubt that. The orphanage doesn't make a habit of letting people take care of children who encourage them to risk their lives on the high seas. Maybe someday, when I'm in charge, Smirt said wistfully. But for now, you're going to live with a Mr. Greeley.
Their caseworker snatched a folder off a stack of books and opened it. Sabrina noticed the title of the book on top. It was called The Purpose-Driven Life.
Mr. David Greeley is currently in prison, but he's getting out tomorrow and will pick you up as soon as he has met with his parole officer, Smirt said.
Prison? What was he in prison for? Sabrina said.
Let me see. Oh, here it is. Murder, the caseworker said.
Murder? The girls cried, nearly jumping out of their chairs.
Yes, he murdered someone.
No, I'm wrong. That was someone else, Ms. Smirt said.
Sabrina caught her breath and eased back in her seat.
No, Mr. Greeley murdered several people. Seven, to be exact. Beat them to death with a crowbar, Smirt said.
You're going to send us to live with a serial killer? Sabrina said.
No, I'm sending you to live with a former serial killer. Mr. Greeley is rehabilitated. Now, off to bed with you. Newbies have to fix breakfast for everyone, so you better get some sleep.
Smirt shoved the girls down the hall and back into the sleeping area. They found their beds among the rows of snoring, groaning children and crawled underneath the scratchy blankets. Sabrina's cot was next to a window that had a baseball-sized hole in it. The cold wind blew directly onto her feet, so she tucked herself into a ball for warmth. Before Ms. Smirt left, she handcuffed the girls to their beds.
"Well, I suppose you're happy now," Daphne said when Smirt had scurried back to her office.
"Happy? Why would I be happy about this?
Isn't this what you wanted? To get away from Granny, the Ever Afters, and Fairyport Landing? Now you can pretend none of it ever happened."
Daphne, every step you fought her. You've complained and disobeyed and been a real...
Jerkazoid?
Yes, the little girl cried. And don't use my word.
Daphne, I'm only trying to protect us, all of us. Can't you see what has been happening since we moved in with Granny? I accidentally killed the giant. I nearly got Mr. Canis killed when the school exploded. And look what's happening to him. Puck had his wings torn off trying to protect me, and now Cobweb is dead, too. I'm jinxed. I'm not meant to be a Grimm. Everyone I'm close to is in danger, including you.
That's crazy talk, the little girl whispered.
I don't even want to be a fairy tale detective. Neither did Dad. And when he had his opportunity to walk away, he took it. He did it because he thought this life was too dangerous, and he was right. I don't want my sister to get killed or fall under some twisted nutcase's magical spell. I want us to get out now, while we still can. If Mom had done the same thing, who knows how our lives would be?
Our mother was trying to help people, Daphne said. So she failed.
I'd rather try and fail than stand by and watch people suffer. We're Grimms. That's what we really do. Help people.
Daphne, I'm getting out of here, with or without you, Sabrina, Daphne said.
She turned her back on her sister and grew very still. Sabrina knew her well enough to know that talking was over for the night. She only wished that her sister could see her point of view. She had been a jerkazoid in the past, but this time she was truly thinking of someone other than herself. With her free hand, she reached for her coat at the end of her bed, searched its pockets, and found her mom's wallet. She opened it up and found the picture she had grown to adore. She stared into her mother's face, unsure of whom Veronica Grimm really was. How could she be so close to her and not know anything about her? Why did Veronica choose this life? Why wouldn't anyone, given the choice, just walk away?
Smirt woke them early and seemed to enjoy the fact that the girls were exhausted. She unlocked their handcuffs and dragged them out of bed and into the orphanage's kitchen,
where they were put to work on the morning breakfast, a disturbing combination of powdered eggs and milk that had a questionable expiration date. A hulking man who had hair nets on both his head and beard instructed them to add whatever he handed them out of the fridge to the mix. Several catfish went into the pot, heads, bones, eyes, and all. Next, a bottle of barbecue sauce, a greasy package of bologna, and some mushrooms that might have been picked out of the orphanage's basement. When all the ingredients were added, the girls were given a huge wooden spoon, nearly as big as an oar, and told to stir the concoction until it boiled. Every couple of seconds, a bubble would appear on the surface of the mix and pop, shooting out a hot spray of steam that scalded their hands. It was hard on Sabrina, but not nearly as hard as Daphne's silence. She tried to talk to her sister several times, and the girl just turned away. Deep down, she wished for a snot or jerkazoid, but the little girl refused to even insult her. When breakfast was ready, the girls were required to serve it to all the dirty, half-asleep children who staggered through the meal line. There were many faces Sabrina recognized, kids who would probably be in the orphanage until they were old enough to get jobs. None of them seemed to care that the Grimm sisters had returned, except for Harold Dink. Harold was a freckle-faced kid with a skin condition that resembled the mange. Many patches of his bright red hair were missing. When he got to the counter, he sneered, pointed, and laughed. "Hey, everybody, look! The sisters ugly are right back where they started!" "You know, Harold, you should really be nice to the people who are serving you breakfast. You never know what might accidentally fall into your eggs," Daphne said.
"You don't have the guts, geek."
Even though Daphne wasn't speaking to her, Sabrina instinctively came to her defense. "Hey, Harold, why don't you go steal some more money out of Smert's office and then pretend you found it for her? How did that turn out the last time? Didn't she send you to live in a petting zoo?" The kids in line roared with laughter. Harold slammed down his tray and stomped away. Sabrina and Daphne were the last ones allowed to eat, though neither had much of an appetite for what was left at the bottom of the pot. Instead, they grabbed a couple slices of stale bread and found a table in the back of the cafeteria. Sabrina took a bite of her bread and cringed. It was as tough as cardboard. "I suppose we're going to meet Greeley today," she said. But despite their united assault on Harold, Daphne didn't respond. Defeated, Sabrina went back to her bread and munched as quietly as she could. David Greeley was a skinny guy with stringy muscles and thin chicken legs. His face could have used a shave 2 weeks earlier, and he had a crooked smile to match his crooked teeth. His forearms were covered in tattoos, many of which looked as if they had been done while riding a horse. "Yo," he said when he met them on the front steps of the orphanage. "Say hello to your new daddy," Ms. Smert said as she reached down and gave the girls one of her trademark pinches on the shoulder. Sabrina nodded at their new foster father, but Daphne said nothing. "Good. They're quiet. Nothing worse than a couple of yapping kids," the man said. "I had a neighbor who had a dog that made a lot of noise. He ain't got no dog no more, if you know what I mean." Greeley made a gesture, as if he were cocking a shotgun. Daphne crinkled up her nose and looked as if she was preparing to kick the man in the shins. Sabrina stopped her with a warning hand on the shoulder. Greeley bent over and rubbed the girls' heads, as if they were beagles. "Let's get something straight, girls. I'm in charge. I don't take no guff, and I don't give no guff."
"What does guff mean?" Daphne asked.
Sabrina shrugged. "It means lip, sass, back talk," Greeley answered. "I'm your father now, and as your father I deserve a little respect. You do what I say without question and things will go smooth. You don't do what I say, then we're going to have problems. There's only one way to do things, my way or the highway."
"So, just to be clear, you want us to do what you tell us to do," Sabrina said, though she knew the sarcasm was lost on Greeley. He nodded and smiled. Smert, on the other hand, gave her another painful pinch.
"It's important to be firm," Ms. Smert said. "Tough love might just be what these girls need."
"Yeah, so you said I was going to get some cash for this," Greeley said.
"Yes, your assistance check will come in the mail in 7 to 10 days," Smert replied.
Greeley frowned and spit something brown onto the ground. "Well, there goes Atlantic City, doesn't it? Come on, kids. I just got out of the joint and haven't seen my old lady in years. If she plays her cards right, she might be your new mommy."
Sabrina took her sister's hand and allowed Mr. Greeley to lead them to his pickup truck.
"Don't come back, girls," Ms. Smert said with a wicked smile.
The girls climbed into Greeley's truck, and he gunned the engine, then whipped it into fourth gear and let the wheels spin until they burned tracks on the ground. He chuckled to himself, as if proud of this display, then shifted back into first gear.
"All right, let's get into some trouble," he said.
He drove through the city with reckless abandon. He made turns that were far too dangerous for the amount of snow on the ground and cut people off with glee. He ran several red lights and swore at everyone he saw. He turned one corner and hit a patch of slushy snow, showering water and filth on an old man with a cane. Then he blasted his horn and laughed.
"That was mean," Daphne shouted. "That's why it was funny," Greeley said.
"You should go back and see if he's okay."
"Yeah, right, kid. I'm not going back to check on that old fool. You don't go back to help someone if you meant to hurt them. He'd beat me to death with his walking stick. Don't you know nothing?"
"What did you just say?" Sabrina asked. "About not going back?"
"I said you never go back. What would I say? I'm not sorry. You only go back if you want to help."
Greeley's words echoed in Sabrina's head. "You don't go back to help someone if you meant to hurt them."
"Daphne,
Cobweb didn't kill Oberon," Sabrina cried.
Daphne turned to her sister.
"What?"
"He came back to check on us. He thought we might have been hurt. In fact, he came back twice. Those aren't the actions of a guilty person." "What the heck are you two babbling about?" Greeley asked.
Sabrina ignored him. "He was worried about us."
"But Oberon told us that Cobweb killed him," Daphne argued.
"Do you think he was lying?"
"No. Yes, I mean, I don't know. Oberon was a lunatic, but there are other things that don't add up. Both Oberon and Cobweb said they had never heard of the Scarlet Hand.
Then how did their mark get on the king's body?" Sabrina asked.
"Someone else must have put it there," Daphne said. "Then why did Oberon think Cobweb was the killer?"
"Cobweb was the last person the king saw before he died. He brought him some wine to celebrate their plans. What if someone put the poison in the wine before Cobweb even got it?"
"Hey, why don't you go back to the no-talky-talky that you were doing when we met? You're giving me a migraine," Greeley complained.
"We've got to find Granny," Daphne said.
The car stopped at a red light, and before Sabrina knew what was happening, Daphne had jumped out of the car, dragging Sabrina with her. The girls had pulled this trick a dozen times, but Sabrina had always taken the lead. This time, Daphne was doing it, and Sabrina was completely unprepared. She fell on the icy pavement as Greeley threw his door open and ran after them, screaming,
"You come back here!"
Daphne raced ahead, seemingly unaware that Sabrina had fallen. Before the older girl could get to her feet, she felt Greeley's hands in her long blonde hair. He was yanking her up by it.
"Let's go get your sister," he said, pulling her along with one hand and carrying a crowbar in the other.
They crossed a busy street, dodging cars and pedestrians, then zipped into an alley. Unfortunately, Daphne had led them all into a dead end. Sabrina watched her sister spin around in panic.
"I thought you were right behind me," Daphne cried. "I'm sorry."
Greeley dragged Sabrina into the alley and tossed her at her sister's feet. Then he smacked his crowbar into the palm of his hand. It made a sickening sound.
"What did I say? What did I say?" he growled.
I said, it's my way or the highway.
I guess we took the highway, Sabrina said, rubbing her sore head.
Now we've got a problem, Greeley said. You see, I've got me a temper, and when I get angry, I do things I regret.
Don't take another step toward us, Sabrina shouted.
See, this is what I'm talking about. I don't want no guff, you little brat, Greeley said. Didn't they tell you I'd killed 7 people?
Is that all? A voice said from above.
Sabrina looked up and saw a huge figure dropping out of the sky. He landed on the ground hard, cracking the cement underneath him. When he stood, Sabrina smiled. It was Mr. Canis. Hardly a number I'd brag about.
Greeley took a step back, but then clenched his fists.
Where did you come from? Okay, you want to get in my business?
He swung his crowbar threateningly.
I know I want to get into your business,
another voice said from behind the thug. It was Mr. Hampstead.
I was thinking I'd like to as well,
a third voice said from above. It was Bess, floating down from the sky with her rocket pack blasting. She touched down on the ground, and the flame went out.
What are you people? Greeley screamed.
We're fairy tales,
Mr. Hampstead said. It's time for your bedtime story. Hampstead punched Greeley in the face, and the greasy criminal fell over like a tree. Bess walked over and kicked the man as he curled up into a ball. Mr. Canis, on the other hand, stood by looking bored. Sabrina could have watched the beating all day, but a hand was on her shoulder. She turned and found Granny Relda standing behind her. Daphne was hugging the old woman with all her might, but Granny still had a free hand to pull Sabrina into the embrace.
Come along, girls. We need to leave the city as quickly as possible. I'm afraid I may have gotten the family into a lot of trouble with this incident, Granny replied. Smert will surely send the police to arrest me for kidnapping.
No, Granny. We have to go see Titania, Sabrina said.
What? Why?
She needs to know Cobweb didn't kill her husband.
When they reached the Golden Egg, Mustard Seed was waiting outside Oberon's old office. He led them into the room where the queen sat solemnly at her husband's desk. She was now wearing a smart pinstriped suit, tailored for her figure, but reminiscent of the one Oberon had worn. She had a framed photo in her hands. She looked tired, and her eyes were red, as if she had been crying. Oz stood by, watching her with concern. When he noticed the group, he rushed to join them.
Mustard Seed, your mother is having a difficult day, he said. I'm sure I can handle any of this business for her.
No, Titania said without looking up. Step forward, son, and bring your friends.
Mustard Seed led the family forward and then bowed to his mother.
This was a happy day, she said, holding up the photograph. We walked through Central Park amongst the humans. I thought we'd have an eternity of those moments. Now he's gone, and there are so many things I wish I had said.
Titania was quiet for a moment. Though Sabrina was bursting to tell her what she had discovered, she knew that silence was the best thing she could offer the heartbroken queen just then.
I'm told that my husband's murderer has been killed, Titania continued. Your family's reputation for excellent detective work has proved true.
We owe you a debt of gratitude, Mustard Seed added.
Actually, we have our doubts about Cobweb, Granny said.
Indeed, Oz said.
My granddaughter has given this some serious thought and has some interesting questions that don't have answers,
the old woman said, gesturing for Sabrina to step forward.
You are Puck's chosen protector, I understand,
Titania said. Sabrina nodded, sniffing her still pungent hair.
For better or worse. You don't believe that Cobweb killed his father? Titania said as Moth entered the room.
The fairy girl flashed Sabrina her usual angry look. Sabrina shook her head.
Cobweb didn't act like a murderer. First, he was working with Oberon to rebuild Fairy.
He told me that he and the king were working on a homeless shelter and a hospital. He told me that he respected and supported Oberon.
He was lying, fool, Moth cried.
Sure, a person can say anything, but what they do is different. We chased him all over town. When we were nearly killed in the subway, he came back to check on us. Then, when the pirates kidnapped us, he came to try to rescue us.
Not the acts of a murderer, Mustard Seed said.
Sabrina nodded. We think it was someone in the Scarlet Hand. No one here seems to know who they are, but back in Ferryport Landing, they've caused a lot of trouble. They're responsible for kidnapping my parents and want to take over the world. They left their mark on Oberon's body.
But you have no idea who this other murderer might be? Moth asked.
No, Granny Relda added.
Then you are no further along toward discovering his killer than when you started,
Titania cried.
Granny stepped forward.
Not exactly. Cobweb gave your husband a glass of wine, this poison in it. If we can find out who poured that wine, I believe we'll know who the true killer is.
The queen shook her head.
And how do you propose to learn that?
The same way we learned who gave Oberon the poison, Sabrina said.
Scrooge, Daphne cried. He talks to ghosts.
We can go to see him again, and this time we'll talk to Cobweb's spirit, Sabrina explained.
You could come too. You could talk to Oberon.
Titania rose from her chair.
Is this true?
Sabrina nodded.
I seem to have the ability to let ghosts take over my body. It's no picnic, but I'd let it happen again so you can tell him a few of those things you never got a chance to say.
Mother, I've heard talk of Scrooge's talents, Mustard Seed said. Suppose the girl is right. Suppose Cobweb is not the true killer. If that is true, the murderer still walks amongst us. Cobweb could reveal his name.
Titania nodded.
Take me to Scrooge. I'll need a few moments to prepare.
Mustard Seed smiled and turned to the group. We'll join you in the restaurant. Sabrina and her friends left the office and headed back down the hallway. Moth stopped them and sighed, as if she were exhausted. She looked at Sabrina and gritted her teeth.
Puck could emerge at any moment from his vessel. As his protector, it is customary for you to perform a sacred task.
What kind of task? Sabrina asked.
You must toast the emerging king with a special elixir. It is quite an honor.
I really can't, Sabrina argued. We're leaving any minute. Can it wait?
I also thought you would like some time alone with Puck. He's the king of Faerie now. If the kingdom is to be rebuilt, he will have a great deal of responsibility. He'll have to stay in the city.
Sabrina felt something rise into her throat and realized it was her heart. She had never given any thought to the idea that Puck might not come home with them. But of course he would stay. He was a king now. And why would he go back to Ferryport Landing and be trapped inside the town again? She suddenly felt the need to cry, then laughed out loud.
Cry?
Puck was an irritating pain in the behind. He was constantly giving her a hard time, putting slimy things in her bed, dumping her into big vats of sticky glop. There had never been a meal he didn't ruin with his explosive flatulence. She should be happy to get rid of him. She would be free of his army of chimpanzees, his pranks, his name-calling. But then, there had been the kiss. Her first kiss. Their first kiss.
I think we have a few minutes, Granny Relda said.
Okay, Sabrina said. I'll do it.
Moth led her down the hallway to her room. Once inside, the little fairy closed the door and locked it.
No one can enter during the ceremony.
Puck's cocoon was inside what looked like a giant birdcage, and the second Sabrina stepped toward it, the cocoon slammed against the bars, seemingly in an effort to be near her.
I will prepare the elixir, Moth said.
You do that, Sabrina said, impatiently.
Moth came to a table filled with potions and powders and went to work, busily mixing them together in a small ceramic cup.
On the day of a fairy's emergence from its cocoon, our people drink a ceremonial toast to a healthy new life. Very few humans have ever been present, Moth said. Well, I'm happy to be included, Sabrina said, reaching into the cage and putting her hand on the slimy cocoon. She expected it to be cold and damp like before, but it was warm and alive. Maybe he could hear her. Puck, I've come to say goodbye. You're free from Fairyport Landing. That's something a lot of Everafters and I myself would like to be. You're going to stay here with your mother and brother. Apparently you're the new king of the fairies, so you're going to have to grow up a little. I never got a chance to say I was sorry for slugging you when you know. The memory of their kiss flashed into her mind again. I wasn't expecting it, and, well, it wasn't exactly a dream come true to be surrounded by a bunch of tick-eating chimpanzees. I was angry when it happened. But I'm glad it was you. She could feel tears welling up in her eyes. Okay, enough of that. You take care of yourself. I'm going to come back here someday, and if I find out you were a jerkazoid, there's going to be trouble. Moth returned with two goblets. She handed one to Sabrina and raised it for a toast. To Puck. To Puck. Sabrina took a drink. Whatever the ceremonial elixir was, it didn't taste half bad. There was a fruity taste, like raspberries, but there was also a hint of honey and oatmeal, and there was something else, something a little bitter that she couldn't quite place. So, I suppose you two will be getting married, Sabrina said conversationally. Naturally. Once Puck learns that it was I who brought his father's killer to justice, he'll of course take me as his bride. I needed to prove I was worthy of him. Well, don't forget to send me an invitation to the big day, Sabrina said with a sneer. Moth flashed one back at her. To be honest, Princess, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't show up back on our front porch, Sabrina said, taking another sip of her drink. He seems to enjoy tormenting me. Moth set down her glass. I thought the same thing. Suddenly, there was a horrible pain in Sabrina's belly. It was so powerful, she doubled over. She lost her breath and fought to catch it as a second wave of pain rolled over her. She fell to her knees. The goblet of elixir tumbled onto the floor and spilled its contents all over the boards. Moth, I'm sick. Go get my grandmother, Sabrina cried. You think you've got his heart, don't you, human? Well, it's something you should have never had, and I'm taking it back. Sabrina looked down at the cup. Had Moth put something in it? Everything was so confusing, and the pain was so intense, like someone stabbing her with a hot knife. Imagine my humiliation when Puck rejected me. Imagine the looks people gave me. I was supposed to be the next queen, but I held my head high and hoped he would change his mind. But he never got a chance. His father had him thrown out of the kingdom. Get help, Sabrina grunted. When you brought him back, I thought Oberon would give him another chance, but he refused. He told the guards that as soon as Puck was well, he was to be removed. So I had to act fast. I snatched Cobweb's pouch when he wasn't looking and mixed some potions and powders. I collected it in a bottle and stepped back into the celebration. There was food, wine, everything one needs for a proper feast. Cobweb ran past me with a goblet of wine. I knew it was for the king. Cobweb was a loyal and attentive servant. I distracted him and poured the potion into the cup. Moments later, Oberon was dead. I couldn't believe my luck. But then you and your family had to get involved, and then Puck chose you as his protector. I was humiliated again. Well, human, this time I'm not going to let anything get in my way. Another stab of pain hit Sabrina in the belly. This time it migrated up her spine toward her brain. She could barely think straight, and she was too weak to fight back or even call out for help. But there was something going on in the birdcage. Had she just seen Puck's cocoon change shape? Cobweb will tell the truth, Sabrina groaned.
Not without you, Moth reminded her. That old fool Scrooge couldn't get his grandmother to call from the beyond. I'll just tell your family you decided to stay here for Puck's emergence while they go ghost hunting. Even if Cobweb does manage to communicate without you, I've made enough elixir for your entire family, Titania and Mustard Seed.
Sabrina heard a ripping sound. Or had it been her imagination? It was becoming difficult to focus.
Now that Puck is king, we are going to rebuild Fairy right here. I've already mapped out most of Central Park. We'll run the humans out and build a proper castle. Then we'll show the rest of the Everafters who's in charge. They'll bow at our feet.
That ripping sound again. It was coming from behind Moth.
Then we'll take over the whole city. Humans will make good slaves,
Moth continued. Sabrina lifted her heavy eyelids and saw a familiar figure looking down on her from behind Moth.
Grim, are you in trouble again? I swear, if I had a nickel for every time I had to save your sorry behind, I'd be a rich fairy.
Puck, she groaned.
Your Majesty, Moth said as she spun around, I can explain this.
But she never finished her sentence. Puck took out his flute and blasted a couple of notes. A stream of pixies soared through the window, swooped down, and lifted Sabrina off the ground.
What did you do to her, Moth?
The little princess shook her head.
You don't understand, my love. I did this for us.
Puck noticed the goblet lying on the floor. He picked it up and smelled it.
Now that wasn't very nice.
Puck turned to his pixies. Find Cobweb. We need his medicine.
There was some buzzing, and Puck's face curled up in horror. My father?
The pixies twittered on.
Then half of you find my mother. The other half keep an eye on the princess.
The pixies did as they were told, depositing Sabrina in Puck's arms as they set about their tasks. Puck raced to the locked door and transformed his legs into those of an elephant. He used one to kick open the door, and it flew off its hinges and into the hallway. Sabrina looked back to see Moth swatting wildly at the little dots of light.
Sabrina was starting to feel cold.
She trembled so forcefully it hurt, and then the world started to grow very dim. She could hear Puck telling her to stay awake, but she couldn't. She was so tired. She just wanted to rest. Maybe if she did, the pain would go away. She had a disorienting dream. Puck was standing over her, but he quickly morphed into Titania, who melted into Granny Relda, and then into Daphne, who was crying. Don't cry, Daphne. Then Daphne became Canis, who became Hampstead, who became Bess, who became Black Nothingness.
Sabrina woke up in the dark. No, dark wasn't the right word. There was light, but it was faint, and seemed to be behind the walls of the tiny room she was sitting in. No, room wasn't the right word either. It was a space, something small, something confined. She tried to stretch out, but her hands met a cold, damp wall. She reached down and realized she was sitting in fluid, something like gravy, and it was halfway up her chest. She started to panic, reaching around for an opening, and found something above her like a seam. She pushed upward, and a small portion of it tore away. A bright light flooded the space, and she forced herself to stand. She had freed herself, and there, waiting on the other side, was her family.
That was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen, Puck said. Why don't I carry a camera with me?
Sabrina looked down at the prison she had just escaped from and quickly fought the urge to barf when she realized she had just been inside her own cocoon. Granny Relda and Oz rushed to her and wiped away the layers of goop.
How are you feeling? Granny asked.
I feel fine, though I'll never eat eggplant again as long as I live, Sabrina said, looking down at the crushed cocoon.
The cocoon removed the poisons from your system and allowed you to heal, Oz explained. What Moth used would have been lethal without it.
She tried to poison you, like she did Oberon,
Daphne said, rushing to her sister and wrapping her arms around Sabrina's neck. The pixies made her confess.
She told me everything, Sabrina said. She was trying to impress Puck. She was hoping to prove herself so he would marry her. Where is she?
She has been arrested. She'll see a judge as soon as we can determine who might be qualified to be one, Mustard Seed said. He smiled and turned to his brother. Mom's waiting.
Duty calls, Puck said as he rolled his eyes.
He waved to Sabrina and left with his brother. Granny hugged Sabrina and burst into tears.
I am sorry, Sabrina. I would never forgive myself if you got hurt. I should protect you. I should prevent any harm from happening to you.
This wasn't your fault, Sabrina replied. We knew Moth was mean. We just didn't know she was homicidal. We need to question her about the Scarlet Hand now. She can tell us things. She might even know who kidnapped Mom and Dad and put the spell on them.
Granny shook her hand.
She confessed to everything. She isn't in the Scarlet Hand.